This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In the second segment of the program, we're going to focus on the earthquake that hit the U.S.-Mexico border area yesterday and its connection, or not, to the other big quakes that have been held that happened earlier this year. If you have questions about that or if you felt the quake, give us a call at 800-989-8255 or email us talk@npr.org. But first, after more than three decades on the Supreme Court and months of speculation about his future plans, Justice John Paul Stevens confirmed over the weekend that he will surely retire during President Obama's term and will decide soon if that will happen this year or next. President Gerald Ford named Stevens to the court in 1975 at 89. He's the High Court's second oldest justice in history. Known as the leader of the court's liberal bloc, his departure will provide the president the second opportunity to appoint a Supreme Court justice and would surely mean another confirmation battle in the United States Senate. Joining us here in Studio 3A is NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Todd. Nina, always lovely to have you on the program.
Thank you.
And I understand you had a chance to talk with Justice Stevens a little while ago.
I sat down with him for about an hour, about a month ago. It was sort of an off-the-record chat, so I didn't write about it. But he made it very clear that he's thinking about retiring. And I thought he was still somewhat conflicted about it. He's always said that he had a colleague on the court, you know, that would tell him if it was time for him to go. So I reminded him of that, and I asked him if his colleague was still there. And he said, no, it was David Souter, and he left. And I called him up and said he'd betrayed me. He was my check. And so he wasn't there. But, you know, this is a man who is about to turn 90 later this month, who plays singles tennis three times a week, pretty vicious contract bridge, I believe, when I was in his chambers, when I walked in, he was in his shirt sleeves with his bow tie. He was at the computer working away. He's a most lovely, unassuming man. But if anybody has come to be a pivotal person on the court in terms of framing debate, it's John Paul Stevens. Now, he loses more often than he wins in the close cases these days. He's the head of the so-called liberal wing, although he doesn't think he's changed very much since he was so-called centrist conservative when he was named by President Ford. And I would have to say he's changed on a few things, but not dramatically. The court's changed.
The court's changed, and indeed the we'll talk about more about that in a minute. But do you think it will happen this year? We're in the middle of the midterm elections, or will he hold on for another year and put it off till there would be another confirmation battle, presumably in the late summer?
Well, he knows that if there's any chance for confirming someone in time to be sitting on the court when it reconvenes, that he has to do it sooner rather than later. He's been given the schedule by members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He knows when he has to do this, and I would think it's sometime in the next month or so, if he's going to do it now. He also is not an idiot. He knows that the Democrats won't have 59 votes come after the election.
A year from now, yeah.
On the other hand, you know, when I said to him, if you leave the court, what would you do? And he said, that's the problem. You know, this is a man still in the prime of his intellectual life. He's had one really bad day at the court in public, which you and I can discuss in a little while. But other than that, I wouldn't put my brain or anybody else's brain that I know up against that of John Paul Stevens.
And he said, surely we'll leave within President Obama's term because that's the timing or because he wants to be sure that his replacement will be appointed by a Democrat.
I don't think it's so much of a Democrat because, oddly enough, he always considered himself a Republican.
Appointed by a Republican.
Appointed by a Republican, although a pretty apolitical Republican. I think that he believes that Obama, who himself taught constitutional law and whose values he generally probably shares, will do a good job of replacing him, and so that he trusts that. But to say that you're going to leave by the time, you know, under President Obama, all that says is you're going to leave in the next basically 2 years. That doesn't, you know, by then he'll be 92. that doesn't tell you very much. What's he going to do? Say, I'm going to leave in 2018?
His health is good, you said, but that one bad day?
The bad day, and I had never seen anything like it before from him, and neither had anybody else, was when he announced from the bench his dissent in the case in which the court reversed 100 years of campaign finance law and for the first time said that you couldn't put limits on, you couldn't ban corporate and by implication union spending on candidate elections, which had been the law since the early 20th century. And he took the unusual step of reading a summary of his dissent from the bench. It was, I think, a 90-page dissent. He read for about 20 minutes, and he got completely garbled up in pronunciation. It was as if he couldn't see, as if he had the wrong glasses on, and he misspoke a lot of words. And so when I met with him, I said to him, so what happened that day? And he said, how bad did you think it was? Mm. I said, I thought it was pretty bad, actually, not good. And he said it was the worst day that he'd had on the bench, and he felt just awful that he'd blown it. And although his law clerk said you did fine. So I said, so what happened? He said, well, I went to the doctor afterwards and had all these tests run to make sure there wasn't something wrong, and there was nothing wrong. And he said, but I had been up very late the night before working on this. Then I played early singles. I got stuck in a traffic jam. I got here. Then I had to take a shower before I got to the bench and sort of came huffing and puffing up, probably just putting on his robe at the last minute. And I looked at this almost 90-year-old man and I said, you know, Justice Stevens, you could have planned better, basically. And I guess that's what happened, is that he was just sort of a wreck from hurrying.
What, was this before or after the State of the Union speech? I wonder if he had any comment about the experience of sitting there in the House of Representatives as President Obama criticized that decision on which he was a dissenter.
Well, he wasn't there. He hasn't gone for... He decided long ago that this was basically a political event in which he had nothing to contribute, and he just didn't. He hasn't gone for years.
So,
yeah.
All right. We have to speculate. There is already a number of people suggesting that, well, obviously, President Obama's been through this experience just a year ago to pick Sonia Sotomayor, that he may have a short list already.
Oh, I'm assuming he does, and that it's mainly the list from last time. That's usually what happens. And you'll see a lot of stories, including probably from me, about the coming battle.
Mm-hmm.
We in the press always whip this up. It doesn't have to happen that way, although I suspect that Republicans will use whoever if Obama nominates somebody this spring or summer, that that'll become a rallying cry to raise money on the right. But if it's somebody that's not sort of an in-your-face red flag, I think it's going to be very hard to prevent that nominee from being confirmed. I mean, the only nominee who's really been filibustered in modern times was Abe Fortas, and the Democrats helped filibuster the nomination. Republicans started, but the Democrats helped. And then some Democrats tried to start a filibuster of Sam Alito when he was nominated by President Bush II. And they got nowhere. They got a paltry number of votes, about half the number that they got against him subsequently. If, the party out of power doesn't, that to have a filibuster of a Supreme Court nominee that basically would be almost unprecedented would end up feeding the notion that that party was an obstructionist party.
Your former intern, Tom Goldstein, who does the SCOTUS blog, suggests that the prohibitive favorite is Elena Kagan, the Solicitor General.
I think she is one of the favorites, and I know Tom is beating the drums. He's got, a page devoted to her. And she certainly was at the top of the list, along with Sotomayor last time, as were some others, including Janet Napolitano and Merrick Garland, a judge on the D.C. Court of Appeals, and Diane Wood from the Court of Appeals Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago. And I'm assuming that all of those are still finalists, but I'm not as prepared to say that one person is the prohibitive favorite. If you want another woman, you know, Kagan or Wood, but there are other, you know, or Napolitano. But Napolitano has had so many important jobs in her life that she is, as one White House official said to me, the vet from hell.
There is also some people on the left are already speculating that after the possibility of naming two justices to the Supreme Court, the court could be more conservative after two Obama appointments than it was when he found it.
It's possible. Also, possibly not. John Paul Stevens is, you know, having been there three decades, is a force on that court. And he knows how to make coalitions when it's possible. And he can see openings to what they, the various justices, can agree on when there are those openings. You can't make a majority if you don't have a majority. And that is something that the new person will not have. That is not a skill any new justice has. It usually takes a justice between 3 and 5 years to get completely acclimated to doing the work of the court. So it's going to be different.
We just have a minute or so left with you. His legacy will not change, whether he retires at the end of this month or at the end of the next court term. What is he going to be remembered for?
I think that he'll be remembered for keeping in check the various branches of government, and in fact, and to some extent in particular, the executive branch. After all, he wrote the decision that allowed President Clinton to be sued. He was the author of that opinion, saying, just because you're president doesn't make you different. And he was the author of a good deal of the opinions in the Guantanamo cases that said to President Bush, you can't just do this by yourself. There are rules, and you've exceeded them.
NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg with us here in Studio 3A talking about the, well, depending on how imminent it is or not, the departure of Justice John Paul Stevens. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Up next, Haiti, Chile, Turkey, and the latest in a string of large earthquakes yesterday, this time in Mexicali in Baja Peninsula. We'll talk with NPR science correspondent Richard Harris about, well, whether any of all this is connected. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.